League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Welcome back to Tip TV Finance, where I am joined by Jeremy Stretch, head of G10 FX for CIBC.
Good morning,
Jeremy. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
I'm actually really good because I'm so happy there'll never be another autumn statement again.
Indeed, although we'll be moving to an autumn budget, so it's kind of swings and roundabouts.
It's worse.
The Chancellor is taking the advice of what was it? The international agencies and the IMF, and saying, well, let's move the budget from spring to autumn, because that will give parliamentary scrutiny a little more time before the start of the financial year. So we may well end up with two budgets in calendar year 2017, but then transitioning into the autumn budget in the medium run, which
what's the difference between a budget and a statement? It's the same thing.
Well, of course, going back in the day, we used to have one budget, and we never really had anything in the way of an autumn statement. But of course, progressively over the course of the last 10 years or so, chancellors, particularly those that have been inherently political, now the previous one and George Osborne, and going back to Gordon Brown, who wanted to try and engender a degree of political control, brought forward that idea of an autumn statement almost into a mini budget or a political statement in terms of announcing a whole series of measures. That's how we got to this scenario. Philip Hammond, who's seemingly wanting to go back into rather more into the shadows, is rowing back from that sort of political transparency.
That's where I would like him to go back to myself. But he had a great opportunity to stamp his authority in the whole fiscal and monetary scheme of things. The most obvious thing he did was decouple us from that 2020 budget balancing pie in the sky, which was never going to happen anyway.
Indeed.
So we shouldn't be too upset about that. But then all the other statistics we've got, lower growth. Was it lower growth? That was another.
Well, we've got slightly firmer growth in the calendar year, but obviously medium run projections are lower than would have been the case or were the case in the budget back in spring, because, of course, that was in a different world. We were in a pre-Brexit environment at that point. We're now in the scenario where we're trying to discount the necessity of a post-Brexit world, which, of course, has implications for the growth assumptions that the OBR are bringing forth.
Well, yeah, but how do they do their math?
Well, with great difficulty. I mean, in a sense, forecasting is it's rather worse than forecasting the weather, because the variables are rather more movable in terms of macroeconomic forecasting, particularly when you're talking about an era which includes something like the Brexit scenario, which is unprecedented, and particularly when we don't really know how the pieces are going to shift in terms of both the government's negotiating position, but also the negotiating position of Europe. So it is inherently of the view, the reality that the forecasts are nothing more than guesstimates. No, nobody ever likes to admit that, but that's really what they are. And then guesstimates are then put in place in terms of the assumptions that will then ring forth in terms of public expenditure and social security revenues. And that, hence you get borrowing numbers, which are based on some rather spurious or modest growth expectations.
Well, I'll get directly to the nub of your day job, which is FX. But because, I mean, the whole point with, I mean, I think the autumn statement and the aftermath of that, with all the dire numbers and predictions and everything else, that you would have thought the pound would have fallen like 5 cents, but actually the pound's been very robust. What do you think the explanation for that is?
Well, in a sense, we've seen investors building sizable sterling short positions or significant short positions over the course of the last few months. And in a sense, everybody has had an opportunity to really make an assumption as to how negative the UK economic backdrop is going to be over the medium run. And indeed, we had that sort of scenario in the immediate aftermath of June, where some analysts were rushing to be the most negative on the street in terms of those growth expectations for next year. So we saw people talking about negative growth or negligible growth in 2017 and into 2018. I think we've seen a rowing back in some of those. And, we at CIBC, we lowered our growth forecast, but we only lowered them by one percentage point, from around 2.2 to around 1.2. in calendar year 17. So we're still talking about growth, but I think markets have now become discounted the degree of deceleration that even the OBR forecasts are pricing in. So unless we were to see something materially worse than that, and of course that would imply that we would have a very messy period of divorce negotiations during the course of next year, then I think markets have already discounted the majority of the bad news as far as sterling is concerned.
Well, with all due respect to the OBR, which I actually don't have any respect for them at all, because I don't think their track record is very good, but that the one of the benefits of the post-Brexit world, the horrible world we're in at the moment, is that the pound is much weaker, and that's a massive lift for the economy. I mean, that should feed through in a way that even though they've taken it on the downside, they've said, you know, they've been pessimistic, let's say. We could be pleasantly surprised. I mean, you know, the tourists and other people coming in, buying our largely, you know, the manufacturing goods, you know, the jet engines and this and that. I mean, it could actually, it could be anywhere from taking what percentage point off GDP to adding one.
Oh, indeed. You have
it's
to make...
It's strange
you have
that they've actually... I mean, the mystery would be, you know, you could be equally surprised on both sides.
Oh, indeed. Economics and forecasting is all about making judgments. And the judgments, I think, generally are that, yes, you can argue that the manufacturing side should get a boost in terms of the cheapening up in sterling to make exports more competitive. The problem that I have with that in that context is that in terms of some of those manufactured exports, they are assembled. So we have imports that go into those assembled products. So I think the auto manufacturing sector is an obvious case in point. So yes, we're manufacturing more cars than we have done since the 70s, but we're essentially assembling them rather than totally manufacturing them. So the benefits to the export side are not quite as clear-cut as some might suggest. And you're absolutely right that if we go out into the high streets of certainly London, that you're seeing enormous numbers of tourists who are spending very significantly. So there's a bit of a...
Too many, I would say.
Well, that's a debatable point, but there's a tourism benefit. So clearly, those that are coming to this country both to spend and enjoy the sights of the UK and or buy products are clearly getting a huge benefit. Now, that's providing some impetus on the consumption side. So whilst we've got UK consumers who will find that their spending power is gradually eroded into 2017 as import prices go up, that's being at least initially offset by some of this inward spending via tourists. So there are an awful lot of cross currents. And in a sense, I think we've got to recognise that activity in Q3 and Q4 is better than expected. I think the challenges come into next year. That's, as I say, that's now largely been discounted by the market. So it probably suggests that the worst of the downturn in sterling is now behind us. However, there is still this susceptibility to political risk. And that's still the big wild card, not just in the UK, but globally. It is these political uncertainties that cause markets consternation.
Right. Just finally, I mean, we could have talked about Trump, but I just had to go for the domestic view. Dollar through the roof. Is it justified, not justified? Is it what you expected?
Well, we had a view that we thought the dollar would rally into the end of this year anyway, but of course that's become amplified now because we're seeing this presumption of extra fiscal spending coming from Trump on the basis of allowing or prompting spreads in terms of US yields versus other markets to widen out dramatically. That's supporting dollar yen, that's helping to compress euro dollar. So the dollar index has traded levels that we haven't seen since 2003. I think there is still some probable upside, but not significant from here. I think we probably will continue to see that into the first half of next year. But then I think we will start to see that dollar bull run running out of momentum, not least of which because, of course, if Mr. Trump is really going to follow through with some of his more protectionist tendencies, he's not want to allow the dollar to appreciate and or other countries get a competitive advantage versus the US.
Jeremy Stretch, head of G10FX for CIBC. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.